Welcome to this week's Liverpool Live podcast. I'm Bethan Tolley and I'll be discussing the main stories in Liverpool, as well as a roundup of the sport headlines and what's happening in the city over the weekend and next week. Coming up, what this 50-year-old news clip has to do with policing today.
The criminals unknowingly break into TV and the car at the same time. By radio, contact is made with the nearest plainclothes police.
The Chief Constable of Merseyside Police defends state surveillance.
Some people who get on with their lives and aren't too worried about CCTV and all these things, and their view is, I don't do anything wrong, what have I got to fear? There are others who hold a different view, and the balance, I think, is somewhere between the two.
Also, why NHS workers in Liverpool feel that they have no choice but to take action.
The intention is to keep going, because for many NHS staff, there's really no option but to get a pay rise. Because they're struggling so much.
As well as that, we will be finding out what the highest performing schools are in Merseyside. But firstly, Merseyside's Chief Constable has defended state surveillance and measures that some argue are intrusive. Sir John Murphy held a public meeting at Liverpool John Moores University on Monday night. The talk, which was entitled The Surveillance Society, was a discussion led by the Chief Constable in which he backed the use of CCTV and telephone interception when investigating, despite the public's privacy being put at risk. It comes just hours after Liverpool businesses had been told to be on alert for potential pre-Christmas attacks in a terrorism briefing by police, and Home Secretary Theresa May announced several new counter-terrorism measures. Theresa May's new measures mean insurance companies will be banned from footing the cost of terrorist ransoms. Security in Liverpool will be stepped up at both Anfield and Goodison Park, major shopping centres such as Liverpool One and both cathedrals. Before the Chief Constable started his main speech, he played a clip from this PATH news report, first shown in 1964, on the introduction of closed-circuit television by police in Liverpool.
Car parks, as Liverpool and other cities know to their cost, are the thieves' happy hunting ground. Not so much for the cars themselves as for portable radios and anything else they can pick up. In a nearby building, a TV camera has been installed by the Liverpool police, an electronic Big Brother to keep watch over everything going on. At police headquarters, closed-circuit television puts the law completely in the picture. The criminals unknowingly break into TV and the car at the same time. By radio, contact is made with the nearest plainclothes police. The rest is easy. The underworld takes a dim view of all this science. It'll soon be impossible for even a smart man to earn a dishonest living.
And how different things are now. It's difficult to imagine a city centre with barely any CCTV and surveillance these days. I spoke to Sir John Murphy about his view on state surveillance and if he thinks the public will be willing to let the police into their personal lives.
I'm more concerned with the ability to continue to be able to do the things we have been able to do. Technology is changing and the technology is leaving the legislation behind. And in addition, communication service providers, and which hold data that is critical to us keeping the public safe, are increasingly offshoring their operations, which means they're beyond the jurisdiction of UK law. So the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which is the framework under which we apply to access call data and then under which we exercise intrusive surveillance, that act needs updating.
How far do you believe public are prepared to go to allow the state to invade in their personal lives?
That's very much a question for the individual. There are some people who get on with their lives and aren't too worried about CCTV and all these things, and their view is, I don't do anything wrong, what have I got to fear? There are others who hold a different view, and the balance, I think, is somewhere between the two. Different kinds of surveillance are different in terms of the level of intrusion that they bring. So, for example, CCTV is out there, everybody knows it there, it isn't terribly intrusive, and the public understand that it's there to protect them. In terms of some of the other things we do, such as access to call data, such as telephone interception, the public are less informed about it and therefore perhaps more mistrustful of it, and we perhaps don't have the level of consent that we need in order to continue to monitor those people who are intent on doing public harm.
Do you think there should be a judge or someone in charge to stop the police from hacking into whatever they want?
Police can't hack into whatever they want now. Everything that the police do in terms of intrusive surveillance is regulated. And if you read some of the media reporting, you could be forgiven for thinking that isn't the case. But the rule of thumb is the more intrusive a capability is, the more senior, the person who has to authorise it. So, for example, if it's a telephone tapping, it has to be the Home Secretary by warrant. If you want to put a listening device into somebody's car, well, that has to be the Chief Constable. But the very lowest, it's a superintendent, and in some cases it's a judge. So the notion that we can tap into anybody when we want, wherever we want, is patently nonsense.
Are we turning into a kind of Big Brother state, and do you think our freedom is being sacrificed?
I don't think we are turning into a Big Brother state. There is a very real and present danger, most particularly from serious terrorism. There is also a threat from serious and organised crime, and the public need to be kept safe, and they want to be kept safe. There are those who would describe that as Big Brother. I would describe it as common sense, but it's all about balance. What is the society, what level of intrusion is society prepared to accept?
From a journalism point of view, do you think that journalists should have protection with keeping their contacts and sources secret and hidden?
There is a level of protection afforded by case law at the moment. If people are committing serious and organised crime, or they're committing crime such as reaches the threshold of the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, well, nobody should be protected. I'm not protected as a police officer, and neither should journalists be. I think there is an argument that says in order to have a free media and free reporting, then journalists should be able to have their sources protected. I've got no problem, but not if they're breaking the law.
The Chief Constable continued to say in the public meeting that he believes that many people see George Orwell's 1984 as an instruction manual and that it can be dangerous out there and we need to be prepared. He also said that he believes that CCTV is a deterrent and people are less likely to commit crime if they know it's there. The UK's terror threat level was raised from substantial to severe earlier this year in response to conflicts in Iraq and Syria. Dr. David Lowe, former counter-terrorism officer and now a lecturer at Liverpool John Moores University, told me what key issues he thinks we face with surveillance.
Key issues is certainly in relation to counter-terrorism and even organised crime, is you've got individuals who are being more covert and also their counter-surveillance. So the state agency's got to take some measures to try and catch them, basically. And the more technology changes, and then these targets will change in their practice. So then the state agencies then have to change their practice. It's a constant battle all the time. And, of course, the other thing is making sure these things are on a legal footing. That's so paramount. And I think the current main act, the Regulation Investigatory Powers Act, RIPA, it's now 14 years old and starting to show its age a little bit, and I can see why the current government is trying to bring in even more legislation related to surveillance, in particular covert surveillance. So it's quite a challenge. Let's make sure we get on a legal footing so it can't be challenged and it will stay in place. There must be some form of judicial supervision. And the other side is, as technology improves, so the agencies trying to catch them, they've got to be on the ball too and develop with it.
Over 29,000 people in Merseyside were helped by charity food banks between April and September this year. The figures released by Trussell Trust for Merseyside are more than 2.5 times greater than those who accessed a food bank between 2012 and 2013. Reporter Luke Holliday has further details on the story.
The Trust's figures mean that on average 165 people in Merseyside go to food banks every day, which is a 16% increase on last year. Debbie Shelley of the Trussell Trust told JMU Journalism that she believes people are struggling with a rise in food prices.
You know, we're having a lot of low-income families in, and I think benefit changes and benefit delays, but I think the cost of food has gone up and the cost of living. People are struggling.
Every time somebody visits a food bank, they are given 3 days' worth of food. The number of people attending Southport and South Sefton food banks has nearly doubled in the past year. 1,000 people visited South Sefton food bank a month between April and September 2014, up from 522 a month from April and December 2013. The Sharecare charity in Merseyside have urgently appealed for volunteers to help out in gathering food to be distributed across the region. Charlene Spencer of Sharecare told JMU Journalism how the volunteering scheme will work.
We will distribute surplus food to lots of different charities across Liverpool and the Merseyside area. Then those charities support their service users and clients by making meals with the food. And Tesco, we've teamed up with for the 4th support us with that by volunteering their time at a local Tesco store which is allocated to Fair Share. And they can be found through the Fair Share website, which is www.fairshare.org.uk. And they can get involved by signing up, attending a local Tesco and handing out leaflets to shoppers. The leaflets will be shopping list items, which can be purchased and donated. And all the food will stay local and go across the Liverpool and Merseyside charities.
The extent of hardship in the region has forced nearly 30,000 people to seek help in just 6 months. Whether things are going to turn around for people in Merseyside is yet to be seen.
Plans to develop on Liverpool's Sefton Park Meadows has caused controversy with A-list star Kim Cattrall this week. The Liverpool-born star says the new development would be an encroachment on the people's land. Mayor Jo Anderson hit back by questioning whether a Hollywood superstar knows anything about the issues Liverpool faces today. He says the money from the development will be reinvested into the city. The Save Sefton Park Meadows campaigner Kenneth Aspinall has some sympathy with the council after widespread budget cuts.
We have some sympathy with the financial situation that Jo Anderson finds himself in, but we believe that the money that they might get in for the Meadows will not solve the financial problems of this city. We should come up with an alternative rather than using the blunt weapon of just saying, oh, we'll sell that land.
Only half of Merseyside ambulances were available during an NHS strike on Monday morning. Union members were protesting across the country on the government's decision not to give all staff a 1% pay rise. The government had said earlier in the dispute that if they were to grant a pay increase, they would have to axe thousands of jobs across the country. Reporter Shanae Munro spoke to Peter Irwin, the area organiser for Unison North West, about why workers are taking action.
We think that the public are behind us and behind their NHS staff. We've had lots of public support at the picket lines across the region and indeed all over England and Northern Ireland. We think the public are behind this, and that when they hear about how badly NHS workers have been treated, we think that that will help put pressure on the government, and that they will change their mind on this and work towards having a decent pay rise for NHS staff.
If there aren't any changes, will, you know, members of Unison strike again, do you think?
Well, that's a possibility, certainly, in that we already have further action this week. If after this week there's still no change from the government, then the intention is to keep going. Because for many NHS staff, there's really no option but to get a pay rise because they're struggling so much. So we're not going away. We do think our cause is right and the public are behind us. We just need the government to move on NHS pay.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
Four of Liverpool's bus lanes came back into action on Monday after being out of action for almost a year. Reporter Eleanor Finn has more.
The city's 26 bus lanes were suspended in October last year to monitor and analyse their effect on traffic flow, but discussions continue to facilitate cyclists around the city. Cabinet Member of Transport Malcolm Kennedy explains plans to help keep cyclists safe.
Bus lanes being used as cycle lanes are a second best option, and we've got to find over time a better way of having a more dedicated resource for cyclists and a more segregated form of resource for cyclists to ensure that they're kept safer. And we need to find ways of people moving around the city centre more efficiently by cycle.
The review concluded earlier this year with the exception of the city centre. Lanes in Lime Street, St John's Lane and two lanes on the Strand will operate once more.
There have been fears a plague of demon shrimps are invading Merseyside's waterways this week. Users of the region's lakes, rivers and canals are being urged to check their clothes and equipment for the invasive species which attack and eat native shrimps and insects. The alarm has been raised because of the discovery of a demon shrimp in a Lancashire river, which is believed to have originated from the Leeds-Liverpool Canal.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
Children whose parents have divorced are performing poorly in school and are driven to drink or drugs, according to a new survey. Reporter Jake Cottrell has more.
New research into divorce has found that more children are struggling to cope with their parents' separation. A survey has shown that young people's school grades are being affected, and some are even turning to drink and drugs because of it. I spoke to Fiona Ivitz from the family law firm Resolution, who commissioned the report. She says that children's education is suffering.
So we found that education is actually suffering as a result of children's parents' breakups. So 19% of the children we surveyed didn't get the exam results they were hoping for. 15% of them had to move schools, and 32% said their parents tried turning them against one another.
Around 100,000 children see their parents divorce a year in the UK. The survey of 500 young people, including some from Merseyside, found that 1 in 8 turned to drink or drugs as a result. Fiona Itis says there are, however, ways that Merseyside parents can manage their divorce to minimise the effect on their children.
There are certainly techniques that parents can use to minimise the conflict and the impact on their children. So we offer solutions such as mediation, which has people sitting down together and talking through their separation, which can often lead to a much less acrimonious divorce. There's also solutions such as arbitration and also collaborative law. So there's a range of options available to people. And what we're trying to do is, rather than point the finger at people, is encourage people to see that there is a better way to manage a divorce.
Some schools in Merseyside have been named as among the best performing in the country. Liverpool's Bluecoat School was rated the fourth best state secondary school in the North West in the Sunday Times Parent Power List. West Kirby Grammar School, Wirral Grammar School for Girls and Birkenhead School also made the top 10 independent North West secondary schools. Here's the weekly sport roundup with Jake Cottrell.
Tributes are being paid to Philip Hughes, the Australian cricketer who has tragically died at the age of 25 after being struck on the neck by a ball. The batsman was injured during a match in Sydney on Tuesday, and doctors say he never regained consciousness. Liverpool's Champions League campaign will go down to a straight knockout match at Anfield. A 2-2 draw with Ludogorets in Bulgaria means Brendan Rodgers' team must beat Basel at home in their final group match to progress to the last 16 of the competition. The Reds were left frustrated by conceding a late equaliser, but goals from Ricky Lambert and Jordan Henderson did stop a run of 4 straight defeats, and Rodgers says he is happy enough with the way things stand going into the last group game in 2 weeks' time. Both Arsenal and Chelsea did manage to book their place in the last 16 of the Champions League this week. The Gunners beat Borussia Dortmund 2-0 at the Emirates Stadium, whilst Chelsea won 5-0 away at Schalke. The results means both teams are through to the next round with a group game to spare. Formula One's newly crowned world champion, Lewis Hamilton, intends to discuss a new contract with Mercedes during the off-season. He became Britain's first double champion in 43 years after winning the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix this week, claiming the title ahead of his Mercedes teammate, Nico Rosberg. Hamilton and Rosberg finished the season on good terms, but only after some tough moments as they went head-to-head. Owen Farrell's been dropped to the bench for England's Rugby Union International game against Australia at Twickenham on Saturday. He's replaced at inside centre by Billy Twelvetrees. After a good performance against Samoa, George Ford continues at fly half. Lord Sebastian Coe's announced he'll run for the most powerful position in athletics. The double Olympic champion has launched his bid to be president of the International Association of Athletics Federations. Coe headed the London 2012 committee and is the current British Olympic Association champion. I'm Jake Cottrell, and that is your sports roundup for the week.
And what's on in Liverpool this week? Well, Britannia Adelphi Hotel are hosting a grand cabaret night this Friday. It promises talented male vocalists, comedy duos and special guest Keith John McCarthy. There will be a raffle and auction as well as a three-course meal and a chance to dance until late into the night. This Saturday sees the opening night of a legendary rock and roll panto returning to the Everyman, just in time for the festive season. This year, the panto will be a twist on Little Red Riding Hood and will be on stage until mid-January. Carols for Cancer Research will also take place on Sunday afternoon at the Liverpool Metropolitan Cathedral. Starting at 2:30pm, organisers are hoping to raise money for Northwest Cancer Research. Mezzo-soprano Danielle Thomas will take to the stage to perform some of the city's most loved Christmas carols and festive hits, whilst the West Kirby Light Opera Society will also be joining her. There will also be talks from VIP guests on the importance of the cancer research being carried out right here in Liverpool and the North West.
This has been the Liverpool Life, Liverpool Lives podcast, brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.